Jackie Robinson is our diamond. He gave us his infinite strength by pointing us to a future when we were not ready. He was transparent by letting his light shine through even in the face of hate. He conducted a symphony that defines the best of what it means to be a team, to love one another as one. He took the heat and tension generated by his presence and cooled our irrational fears so that we can find true love in our greatest game. Jackie Robinson is who we are, what we play, when we remember, where we came from, how we forgive, and why we can endure the impossible. It is fitting that baseball is played on a diamond, a jewel that depends on its priceless history being present at all times, to remind us that our past reflects how we embrace our greatest future. He touched the four corners of our heart, took us home so that we could all be 42, not just today, but every day.
It's beautifully done by our friend Doug Glanville. Today, April 15th, the anniversary of Jackie Robinson's historic Major League debut as he broke baseball's color barrier, and has been tradition each season since 2004. Major League Baseball will commemorate Jackie Robinson Day as all players, all coaches, all umpires will wear the number 42, which is a great opportunity. If your kids say to you, Mom, Dad, why are all the players wearing number 42? It gives you a great opportunity to tell them about the greatest legend in the history of American sports. With that, we welcome you back to Get Up. We're coming to you live, as always, from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. My name is Greeny, and we are jam-packed. Let's go. Roll it. We got a lot to get to this morning. It's time to get up, first and foremost, with a night to remember. We had buzzer beaters. We had three-point bombs. We had a no-no that should have been better. You'll see all of it in this hour. Then, the fallout from a field day. You'll hear exactly what changed as a result of Justin's second pro day. Bobby Carpenter was there. He'll join us live in just a moment. And number one opens up. Did he say too much? We'll tell you what Trevor's talk really means for his NFL career as we get up with you, starting right now. And we begin with the biggest NFL story of the day. 2 weeks exactly till the draft, Justin Fields yesterday held a second pro day, working out in front of scouts and evaluators. The 49ers were there, their head coach Kyle Shanahan, the Patriots were there, their offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels. In fact, we can confirm these teams were there. The Niners, the Patriots, the Panthers, the Broncos, the Bears, all of those interesting in their own way. Now, this was closed for the most part, so not too many people got a chance to see what happened. But one of those who did is the mayor of Columbus, Ohio, as I like to call him. That's my buddy Bobby Carpenter, who just finished his radio show, and he's good enough to jump in with us here with Lewis and Booger. Bobby, good morning, as always. First and foremost, what can you tell us about yesterday as far as who you saw there and what the importance of what you think happened yesterday?
Well, I think it's important, obviously, to have the second pro day this year because they don't have these personal one-on-one visits. They don't have the private workouts that they used to have before. So that was a chance for Kyle Shanahan to hand his script over and say, hey, go for this, Justin Fields. This is what you're going to be able to do. Let me see you work on some of the things that I'd like to see you do. Joe Brady was there from the Panthers, their offensive coordinator. So he's locked in and watching after, you know, his head coach and general manager were just there the last time. So you put all of these people around, you get to see him one more time, you get to touch and kind of feel the guy for what he kind of stands for, his substance, how he carries himself. And to me, that's probably the biggest thing, because he went out there, it was second verse, same as the first as far as throwing. All these guys look great. He's got a powerful arm. But what does he look like? How does he command? How does he communicate with his receivers, which he did really, really well talking to some young freshmen through some of these NFL route concepts?
Did you see anything of consequence in any of the interactions, be it with, we saw Josh McDaniels, Patriots, that's interesting. You mentioned Brady from the Panthers. There's Kyle Shanahan in that photo talking to Ryan Day. What, if anything, did you see in the interactions that you thought was important?
I thought it was very interesting at the end. As you're sitting there watching, it's kind of been thrown around a little bit of some images of him kind of laughing with Kyle Shanahan. The 49ers traded up a lot. So people thought, who are they coming to get? Is it Mac Jones? You've thrown out there Greeny, Trey Lance, which I think also would fit. But you see the interaction. It seemed like there was, you know, a genuine respect there. The communication, they joked around for about a minute, minute and a half. And so you're watching this, and I think that Kyle was kind of impressed, at least about what you would have seen afterwards.
So let me bring everyone in here. And Lewis, let me come to you again as one who has done this. I mean, has literally had to make these decisions. we're close enough to the end of the process that I find myself wondering, particularly for a team like San Francisco, let's say, that made the aggressive move to come up, can anything happen at this stage of the process that would change their mind? Could going and seeing Justin Fields in person yesterday be significant enough that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch in San Francisco could actually change their mind about what they're doing at number three?
Sure, anything's possible, Greeny. Look, because we're dealing with human beings, right? And we're dealing with, it's not like we're talking about Justin Fields is, I think it may have been Field or yourself who said it earlier. I mean, Justin Fields is not like some consolation prize, man. It's not like we're talking about, you know, Mac Jones and then, oh yeah, you know what, maybe we'll consider Justin Fields here. So let's just get a look at, this guy is a premium prospect here. This guy's going to be a superstar in the NFL. So yeah, there's very much so the possibility that they could have got something out of yesterday that they didn't expect to get out of yesterday, or they could have gotten some kind of feel for Justin with Kyle standing there and looking him in the face and talking to him one-on-one for the brief time that he did, that could sway how he feels depending upon how close he had these two rated in the first place. Look, if his mind is already made up, if he already feels as though after having seen Mac Jones in person, scouted Mac Jones, getting all the requisite information from all of his lieutenants in his personnel department that he's your guy, then maybe what happened yesterday doesn't do anything for him other than just check off another box. But if it's real close, sure, there's something that he could latch onto that says, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to go this way with it. Because he doesn't have to satisfy us. He doesn't have to have already been locked in on one guy when he moved up, despite the fact that people say he needed to be. He could have had two guys in mind. Hell, he could have three guys in mind, and he's still trying to figure it out. That's up to him. So, yeah, yesterday could carry a lot of weight for him.
Booger, if I were to give you the job right now of being the 49ers general manager, I'm literally giving you that job right now, and I'm saying you go ahead and make the pick. Which one are you taking? Which quarterback of the three we expect to be available are you taking?
Greeny, I'm going to take Justin Fields, and I'm going to maximize my ability to be efficient and to make plays in all areas, because we sat there and we saw highlights from his first pro day, the elite arm. He can throw the football anywhere, you know, all the jargon. He can make all the throws. But what he also can do, make good decisions, throw the football accurately, the toughness. We saw the hit in the semifinal game against Clemson. Then he came back and played against Alabama in the championship game. So you know you're getting a tough guy. You know you're getting a guy that's going to show up. And on top of that, Greeny, Kyle Shanahan has to ask himself the question. When I called the play and when I set it up for it to be completely successful and the defense just has my number, can whoever I pick make me right? I'm not going to make myself right in that situation. I'm going to call a play that the defense is going to cover. Do I have a quarterback that can make me right? I don't know if Mac Jones can make him right, Greeny. And to your point about do they know who they're going to pick, I think by now, Greeny, any good organization who's had months of scouting, the coaches have had months to look at this tape, they know who they're going to pick. Now, why they went to Columbus, maybe they wanted to just lay another set of eyes on Justin Fields. But I know one thing, when John Lynch took the job, my former teammate, the one thing he talked about when he took the job was maximizing his time. I don't think he flew across the country to be in Columbus just to hang out and just to check a box. That way we all can say, hey, he went to every pro day. No, he did that for a reason. Now, maybe it was to confirm or maybe it was something else. But I do think by now they've made their mind up. You don't waste your time. Time is too valuable in the team building process. And if it were me, Green, it's really simple. I wouldn't even hold the card for long. I would write Justin Fields' name down and I would walk up because I can maximize what he can do in the pocket and also the extra element outside the pocket, which is so valuable these days.
Go ahead, Bobby.
And so, you know, lastly, I'll leave you with this here, Greeny. You know, when Lewis is talking about meeting him, you know, your film is essentially your resume. But there's a reason why we do interviews when you're trying to hire somebody. You want to be able to be there. You want to look them in the eye. You want to have a feeling for what they are. You know, after Pro Day, I sat down with Justin for about 25 minutes.
Let me get in here.
And it reaffirmed to me how impressive he was with what type of human he was, how he carried himself. And then I, you know, even joked with him about the baseball thing and him talking about how he hasn't competitively thrown a baseball really since high school. So, you know, he's checking all the boxes for you as a leader of your organization because the skills and the elite traits are obviously there.
Bobby, I want to ask you about one more thing. And if this makes me late, David, we'll get back to the other stuff later. But this came up earlier in the show, and I think it's interesting. There were these quotes from Trevor Lawrence in this interview in Sports Illustrated in which, and I'm just paraphrasing very loosely now, he essentially said, look, I don't live and die for football. I love it. I'm committed to it, but it's not my whole life. And Lewis brought up a fascinating point, that with some of this narrative that has sort of been created around Justin Fields somehow, if he had said that, imagine what the reaction would be. And that really got me to thinking. We had a good discussion about that about a half hour ago. So, Bobby, I'm just curious, your perspective as someone who's much closer to him than any of the rest of us are, what are your thoughts on this narrative that seems to now exist in some places surrounding Justin?
Yeah, I think Justin loves football as much as anyone else you're going to find. And the reality is, you heard Trevor Lawrence say that, this is a little bit different now in coaching the 21st century athlete. You're not seeing those same guys from the 70s, 80s, you know, and even the 90s. Guys have a little, they have different interests, they have other things going on. But as far as Justin Fields' love for football, man, the dude loves the game. It's all he does. He works on it. He's passionate about it. And you can see that come through. And that's why I think it was important for some of these coaches and general managers to be there to kind of see him interact with it and to see that this isn't just something he's doing. This is something he actually does love.
That's a really good point. Booger made the same point about how just it's a little bit of a different generation. It may have more to do with that than it does with anything else. All right, Bobby, it is great to see you again, as always. Thank you for jumping in here, my friend. We always appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. And you know what? Ryan Pace being there, maybe the Greeny household will be happy again someday soon.
We'll see. That's a long way to go up from number 20. We'll see if they can do it. Thank you, Bob. Let me get you to the performance of the night last night. Oh, did you see what? Speaking of Chicago, did you see this? Carlos Rodon on the mound for the White Sox. He took a perfect game into the ninth inning against the Indians. Josh Naylor leading off for Cleveland. Rodon at 97 pitches, but this one's a close one, a close play at first. Jose Abreu, oh, they got him. They call him out. Take another look. This one would go to review, and it would be confirmed. Naylor is out, and so Rodon is two outs away from a perfect game. The next batter is Roberto Perez. The count is 0-2, and you're not going to believe what happens on this 0-2 slider. It hits him. It actually hits him on the back foot. There goes the perfect game. Just like that, it's almost impossible to believe. He would wind up, the next batter would wind up striking out, though, so Rodon would need one more out for a no-hitter. This is Jordan Luplo, and there it goes. Carlos Rodon throws a no-hitter for the Chicago White Sox with no walks, seven strikeouts, the only base runner on a hit-by-pitch as the White Sox win it by an 8-0 score. What a crazy game. That is, it is the 20th no-no in White Sox history. They're the second team to reach that plateau. Only the Dodgers have more. Rodon personally just became the sixth pitcher all time to miss a perfecto because of a hit batsman. All right, we're just getting started on a crazy hour. Coming up, there's been a lot of noise about Russell Wilson's future in Seattle. One of his top targets had some very interesting things to say. You will hear what those were coming up. Plus, Cam coming back for one more season. But should the Patriots move up to draft his replacement? That's the question. We've got the answer. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
We're back on Get Up, and after much ado about a potential Russell Wilson trade and 4 trade destinations later, Russell Wilson is still a Seahawk. He's been critical of the Seattle offense openly and other things. His teammate Tyler Lockett weighed in yesterday.
And I think we have to go into it with a mind that's able to accept and listen and understand and not act like we know everything. When you look at the first half of our season and you see the way that we played, I mean, why would we ever stop playing like that, right? Like everything is clicking, whatever we choose to do. And it worked so good to where we really didn't have to worry about adjusting. We made everybody adjust to us. It wasn't until the second half of the season where we were truly faced with having to learn how to adjust.
Well, this is just fascinating. I mean, here it feels to me anyway, and Lewis Riddick and Booger are here, like these are just, this is a second player kind of openly questioning a lot of the significant coaching decisions that get made on a team. And Booger, we don't hear that often. What do you take away from that?
Yeah, Greeny, you can tell the frustration with the offense because early in the season it was let Russ cook and the offense was outstanding and Russ was playing great and all the receivers were getting the balls. But here's the issue, and this is the one thing that offensive players and quarterbacks have to also remember. It's about team and team building because the first half of the season, while the offense was cooking, the defense was stinking. They were on pace to be the worst defense in the history of the National Football League. So, yeah, you were playing great offensively, but your team wasn't playing great overall. And I think Pete Carroll, a coach that's won Super Bowls, a coach that's taken teams to Super Bowls, he understands that in order for you to win, you have to play complementary football. And early in the season that they weren't. And I understand the offense was not as wide open early on, but the team started to play better. The team started to perform better. The defense got better. So I think what you have, Green, is you have a stare down. You have an offense and offensive personnel, Russell Wilson, wide receivers. They want to play a certain way because they get to put up statistics and numbers and everybody knows about the flash and they're on SportsCenter. But Pete Carroll understands there's more than one phase of football. We have to play defense. And I think that's the headbutting that's going on right now. You heard Russell Wilson. Now you're hearing Tyler Lockett. They have to understand, how do we win Super Bowls? Pete has been there and done that, running the football, playing defense. They haven't done it with letting Russ cook, and I think everybody is frustrating right now.
What do you think, Lewis?
Yeah, look, I think there's clearly some issues there as far as what the players feel as though gives them the best chance to succeed and what Pete has always felt as though gives him the best chance to succeed on a team level. And I think there obviously there can be a marriage of the two. There can be some collaboration to the point where the players feel as though they are being utilized to their maximum, and then Pete is doing what he knows is best for the football team. And look, when you look at and you split their season in half, or rather if you split it in thirds, you know, in the beginning third, middle third, and the last third of the season, in the beginning third of this season, look, this is a football team that Russell Wilson was on fire. He was throwing the football at a great clip. He was, you know, his touchdown interception ratio, his passer ratings were all through the roof. And that last third of the season, it was not, regardless of how well or not well the defense was playing, they weren't, you know, really firing off at the same kind of clip that they were in the beginning of the season. And then maybe that did cause the offense to kind of retract a little bit and kind of, you know, rein itself in as far as taking as many chances throwing the football. And, you know, when players don't like that kind of thing, obviously when you're a quarterback of Russell Wilson's caliber, you're not going to like that kind of thing. You're going to want to be given the benefit of the doubt to work your way through that kind of stuff. And you can see that also being talked about here by Tyler Lockett. Because, look, I'm sure all those guys, him, DK, Metcalf, the rest of them felt as though, hey, look, just give us a chance. Just keep throwing it up to us. Let us keep playing wide open here as this defense comes along, and we'll be right where we need to be. It'll be interesting to see how they ultimately wind up smoothing this over, because clearly there's a lot of cracks underneath this foundation in Seattle.
Yes, or they don't, and it means it's only the final year for Russell in Seattle. So, Booger, let's look in the crystal ball here. Give me the Booger McFarlane Nostradamus. Is this going to be Russell Wilson's final year in Seattle?
Greeny, I just don't believe that. And we're sitting here going through all these quarterbacks trying to find the best quarterback possible. Seattle doesn't have to do that. You have a quarterback that can play another 8 or 10 years based on how some of these quarterbacks are playing to their mid-40s. So it's hard for me to believe that Seattle, who saw this Rubik's Cube of a franchise quarterback, is just going to allow a little frustration with the relationship to ship Russell Wilson out of town. And now they have to become the New York Jets or the Chicago Bears or somebody else, Greeny, that are trying to find the franchise quarterback. Pete has already done that. Why would he go back and voluntarily do that again? I just don't get that.
That is the big question. Can they find the replacement before they make the decision to move on? We will see. Guys, sit tight. Much more football as we go, and Mel is going to join us. But right now, oh, the thriller of the night. What a finish last night. Mavs, Grizzlies, Luka Doncic. This was magic. Pick it up fourth quarter. Less than five to go. Mavs down six. Doncic working on Ja Morant. The step back. Look at him. Oh, that's the old Dirk Nowitzki. That's Doncic getting it going. Cuts the lead to 4. 30 seconds left. Mavs down by 3. Doncic takes the handoff. Going strong to the hole. Doncic cuts it to 1. 2 seconds left now. Here's your ball game. Mavericks down by 2. This is the play they draw up. Got to get it in. Here comes Luka at the buzzer. Oh, he throws up a one-handed 3, and it's good. Mark Cuban wants to know, was it a 2? Was it a 3? Guess what? It's a 3. That's your ball game. Doncic, 29 points, 9 assists. Lucky or not, it winds up being a game-winning shot on a crazy night around the NBA. Tim Legler rejoins us here, and there are so many things going on around the sport. But, Tim, I wanted to bring you back. We had an interesting conversation in our first hour, and we weren't able to really get to it as much as I would like. Because the spotlight game last night was Sixers and Nets, and so many of the Nets stars don't play. And we're in a circumstance how in this compressed schedule that we have in the second half of the season, we're seeing more and more of this. The people you talk to around the sport, what are they saying and what are the concerns?
Yeah, I mean, the concerns are exactly what you're alluding to, Greeny. Right now, unfortunately, everybody's not aligned on the same page, right? There's different interests here. I mean, you look at the teams, their interest is they're trying to preserve players. And they have bought in because of analytics that load management's going to help do that. I actually think load management, first of all, isn't as big a problem this year as in years past. I think this year it's been injuries that have really derailed these marquee matchups that we look forward to, the fans look forward to, the networks, obviously, the sponsors. All of those people are losing out because you get these matchups that you circle and you want to see teams at full strength, and it's just not happening this year. It's at an alarming rate, really, when you look at the top guys in this league. I don't think there's been a season in which the top 20 players in the NBA have missed more games than they have this year. That's obviously a big problem, but the teams are looking at it like, even with the guys that have legitimate injuries, we're going to err on the side of caution because of the compressed schedule, because of the shorter offseason. We want these guys to be fresh for the postseason when it matters most. So we're going to take a little bit longer, even with what seems like fairly minor injuries in a lot of cases. Guys are just taking longer to get back. When you combine that with the load management, now you've got a serious problem on your hands because there just aren't enough of these guys available on a nightly basis. Take, for instance, Brooklyn and Philly. You know, the top three players for Brooklyn, and there's been 432 available minutes in those three games against Philadelphia. For those guys to play, they've given us 62. James Harden played one game, and Kyrie played last night. That's it. So when you look at, you know, trying to figure out the pecking order in Eastern Conference, you think, well, Brooklyn's healthy, they're going to roll through. Problem is, I want to see them stack up against Philadelphia at full strength. I want to see them against Milwaukee at full strength. We're just not getting those matchups, and certainly the Western Conference has been the same situation with what's going on with the Lakers. So it's unfortunate for the fans at the top of the list, but the networks, the sponsors, and guys like me that want to break it down and try to figure out how these teams stack up against each other, we're the losers in this. In a year that's really been unprecedented with the number of guys that have missed time.
Yeah, it's a very complicated situation. We'll dive into it a little more on radio later today. Thank you, Legs. Great to see you. Thanks for getting up and jumping in here. Meantime, want to make sure everyone knows we got a really good NBA doubleheader coming your way tomorrow night. It begins with the Clippers visiting their old coach, Doc Rivers, plus Joel Embiid and the Sixers. Then at 9:30 Eastern, the surprising Knicks square off against Luka and the Mavs. That's your doubleheader tomorrow night on ESPN. As we continue, the Patriots have a fascinating decision ahead of them. Cam Newton is their quarterback now. Will he be by the time we get to week one? We will answer that, and guess who joins us? The one, the only, Mel Kiper Jr. live with us next. Get up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Back on Get Up. Let's play either or. Lewis, which quarterback do you project to have the biggest career? Mac Jones with the 49ers or any of the other first-round quarterbacks?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go with Trey Lance if he goes to the Atlanta Falcons. I just think that this is just the ideal place for this young man to go. When you break down North Dakota State's tape from 2019, you would think that it was Arthur Smith calling the plays in terms of personnel usage and formation usage and the usage of motions, the play-action passing game, the drop-back passing game, the emphasis on the run game. Trey Lance's ability to run the football himself, I just think he's going to have a spectacular career if he winds up at one of those types of places.
Meanwhile, Mel Kiper joins us. Which player do you think has the bigger rookie impact, Penei Sewell or DeVonta Smith?
I think it depends on where they go, Grinny. Penei Sewell goes to Cincinnati, the Bengals. He may be a guard his rookie year, like Jonathan Ogden was in Baltimore. Then be a left tackle second, third year. But I think if you go to Carolina, you're protecting Sam Darnold's blind side. You're the left tackle. Obviously, it sets up for Sewell to get a lot more notoriety. For DeVonta Smith, same thing. If he goes to, say, Carolina, then he's the third option. You got DJ Moore. You got Robbie Anderson. You got Christian McCaffrey. But if he goes to, say, Philadelphia, if he drops down there, then he becomes the main entity for Jalen Hurts. All of a sudden, it's a different ballgame. Same thing in Detroit, where they have no receivers. And you got Jared Goff. He could be the top guy.
And finally, Booger, who do you believe is the starting quarterback in New England week one?
Green, I think it's going to be Cam Newton, and I think until San Francisco selects their quarterback and they're deciding they're going to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo, because if they select Mac Jones, I think Mac Jones is going to play from day one. Now you can trade Jimmy Garoppolo, but if it's somebody else and they say, okay, we need to bring this young quarterback along, Kyle has said, and Kyle has been an open book, Jimmy is the guy that gives us the best chance to win. So therefore, Jimmy's going to be in San Francisco. I think that leaves Cam Newton as the likely starter day one.
Well, let's dive into this a little bit here, because the Patriots were at Justin Fields' second pro day yesterday, which is a very interesting little situation. Their offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels, was there. And we know that Mel has forecast the Patriots trading up to take Justin Fields. We had the legendary former Patriot Teddy Bruschi live yesterday. He liked the sound of that.
He gets there to that 10. I see what Mel's talking about here. It's definitely time for the Patriots to then consider, what do we got to do to get this guy? Because this is the type of guy that could develop under Cam Newton. You know, you teach him for a year, and they would sculpt a program and an offense perfect for him. So I would say this is where you make a move. Go get Fields at 10 if he falls that far.
To me, a seal of approval from Teddy Bruschi just meant something. I can't explain exactly why, but I thought it was very interesting. And in a morning in which we have been ravaged by technical problems, Mel Kiper Jr. is finally with us, and it is a pleasure to see you, Mel. So let's pick it up there. What was the significance to you of all these people being at that pro day yesterday? Josh McDaniels is there. Maybe they're looking to trade up. I mean, Kyle Shanahan flew halfway across the country. He didn't do that for his health. A lot of the Panthers are there. What is the significance to you, not just of the Patriots being there, but all these other people being there to see Justin Fields up close and personal?
Yeah, I asked some people in the league, and they said, you do your due diligence. You got to go. You got to see things and see what's going on and make those assessments. Make sure you didn't see something that you weren't aware of, or if you were looking for something, maybe you finally saw it. Whatever it is, if you're trying to make that call, and for New England, definitely. I don't know if 10's enough now. If you think about Denver at 9, could the Broncos take Justin Fields? Sure they could. Could they take Micah Parsons, linebacker out of Penn State? Sure, Vic Fangio could. So maybe you got to get to that 8 spot. Maybe that's 7. Maybe Carolina says, hey, we don't want to move. We're going to get DeVonta Smith. We're going to get Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater. We may not want to move, but maybe Detroit, who has a ton of holes, may want to get out of 7. So maybe it might not be 10 to get two guys. It may be that New England has to go up to 7, where the Lions are picking, to guarantee the acquisition of Justin Fields.
I just want to make sure that I'm understanding what you're saying. You're projecting a scenario, and it sounds very realistic, in which we could see 5 quarterbacks go off the board in the first 7 picks of the draft, Mel.
Oh, it's very possible. This is a feeding frenzy for quarterbacks. Look at the league. Look at the AFC. The AFC has 13 quarterbacks that are potentially going to be really good, some Hall of Famers, some superstars there. The only 3 teams in the AFC that enter their iconic franchise that have won a ton of Super Bowls is Pittsburgh, New England, and Denver, that have to figure out the quarterback position moving forward. That's the irony of this whole thing. Pittsburgh, Denver, and New England have to figure it out. Justin Fields and Trey Lance are the next guys in line that have a ton of talent. You got to believe, and no quarterbacks even close to them next year, and the number one guy in 2023 is going to be the number one pick overall, the quarterback at Clemson right now. To me, you got to go get him. You can't just stand pat, sit back, and wait. That's not happening.
Lewis, let's get back to the specific New England of it all. And you know Bill well. You played for Bill Belichick. He's in a position he's never been in New England. People say, well, he's never drafted a quarterback. He's never traded up. Well, he's had Tom Brady for 20 years, so he's obviously never had to deal with this. How do you anticipate him approaching this quarterback situation as we look at this draft?
Look, Bill is as economically driven as anyone, and he's someone who exploits market inefficiencies as well as anyone. He's someone who understands the price required, or rather the prices to move up and down the draft board and get in the position to get the people that he wants, whether or not they wind up being good players or not, but to get in position to get the players that he wants as well as anyone. If the price economically makes sense, he'll be a player. There's no question about that. Do not think that this man is just, you know, very conservative and cheap and a guy who's always going to look for the tremendous value. He showed this year he will exploit a market inefficiency as well as anyone, and he will just blow your doors off with it. He came out of the gates humming in free agency. I'm sure right now he is trying to figure out, what do I need to do? What would I need to do if this young man, being Justin Fields in particular, starts falling? There's no doubt that Josh was at that workout yesterday to make sure that, hey, let's just make sure we have a good look at this young man so we know exactly what we would be getting. They both were at Mac Jones' first pro day down in Tuscaloosa talking to Nick and getting the requisite information down there. They're covering their bases. If it makes sense, New England will strike. And that's why we're sitting in the best position that we could possibly be sitting on the desk in Cleveland in a couple weeks. Because it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Green, here's the way I look at it. I think if you're New England, they can't be happy based on where they are. Yeah, they brought Cam Newton back, but it's a deal that's very team-friendly. There's not a ton of guaranteed money there. And if I'm Josh McDaniels and I'm Bill Belichick and I go back and watch the film and I watch Cam Newton, physically, he can still do some of the things he did from 2015, but he's nowhere near the quarterback that he was in that year where he won the MVP. That's an anomaly. I can't win with a quarterback that's skipping slant routes. I can't win with a quarterback that's throwing out routes 10 feet above the receiver's head. So if you're Bill and you're New England, think about this, Greeny. They went out and they committed almost $200 million in free agency. And they did that for what? To support Cam Newton? To think that Cam Newton can lead them to the promised land? I am not a believer that Cam can get it done anymore. I don't know if Bill and Josh are, based on the contract that they gave him, because the contract simply said, we'll bring you back and we'll see what you can do with some incentives. I think they want to win. I think they want to win because Tom Brady has won and they want to prove that they can do it without Brady. But they also know they have to get a quarterback that can be dynamic. And I don't think Cam Newton is going to be dynamic anymore. What did we talk about earlier in the show? The quarterback position. You got to make good decisions and you got to throw the football accurately. Cam Newton hadn't done that in a while. So if you're Bill and you're Josh, you got to find somebody can do that, because he's not going to run over people the way he did in 2015 anymore.
I was just told in my ear that Bill Belichick is going to have a news conference this afternoon, pre-draft news conference at 2 o'clock Eastern. I'm sure he will be very forthcoming and open about all of his plans as we look forward to the draft.
Yeah, he'll tell us exactly what he's doing. Yeah.
Exactly. Let me break on that thought quickly.
Exactly.
We have so much to get to as Mel has joined the party here. As we continue in a moment, number one opens up. Did he say too much? We'll tell you what Trevor's talk really means for his NFL career. That's on the way. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
We've got a special afternoon edition of NBA Saturday for you on ESPN. Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz are the best record in the league. They play the Lakers, who are fifth in the West now. Our coverage begins with NBA Countdown at 4 Eastern. That's a special edition coming your way on Saturday. Meanwhile, this week, Trevor Lawrence sat down with Sports Illustrated and gave them some very interesting quotes ahead of the NFL draft. He's going to be the number one pick 2 weeks from tonight. And here's part of what he said. He said, "I want people to know that I'm passionate about what I do, and it's really important to me. But I don't have this huge chip on my shoulder that everyone's out to get me and I'm trying to prove everybody wrong. I just don't have that. I can't manufacture that. I don't want to." His father, meanwhile, told Sports Illustrated, quote, "He's not award-driven. He's not, I want to win a Super Bowl at all costs." And as I bring the group in, and Mel Kiper, you were not with us in the first hour here as we were having some trouble technically. I will confess that as we were getting ready to do the show today, I thought, this to me is much ado about nothing. I don't really think what he says here matters. And then Lewis brought up a fascinating point, Mel, which is, imagine if those same quotes, with all of the stuff that has been circulating over the last few weeks, came from Justin Fields. Imagine if Justin Fields, someone close to him, said he's not award-driven, he's not, I want to win a Super Bowl at all costs. If Justin Fields said, I can't manufacture a chip, it's just not how I am. It was a very interesting look at the way these two prospects have been viewed differently of late. What do you think, Mel?
Well, completely different situations. Justin Fields went to Georgia, and it didn't work out there. He went to Ohio State, and then people doubted him. He's a fifth quarterback. So he's got a chip. He's come into the league with that. He could have played at Ohio State with a chip because it didn't work out at Georgia. So a completely different scenario for Trevor. Trevor comes in, number one guy, wins a national championship right away. He's being talked about by me and others as being this historically great quarterback, this guaranteed number one pick, like John Elway, Peyton Manning, and Andrew Luck. How can you have a chip? Who are you trying to prove wrong? Everybody loves you. Okay, you're on top. Okay, and you're winning right away. And you're the guaranteed number one guy. He said he's passionate. He said he wants to do everything he can to win. He's not award driven. I love that. I love what his father said. He's not a real play for awards. You play for your team. Okay. Now, the only thing is that last comment about he's not win a Super Bowl at all costs. Now, all costs, what do you mean by that? But the bottom line is you can't compare with Justin Fields playing for a chip because there's a reason why he would and why Trevor's saying, I'm not playing with a chip. I'm not out to prove anybody wrong. There's no haters. So what's the deal here? So I think if you look at it and you break it down, only that last comment about the Super Bowl at all costs is the only issue I would have. But that's his father saying it, not Trevor.
Go ahead, Bug.
Well, Greeny, kind of the way I look at it is these athletes are different now. And when we in society who are much older, we want people that can come from behind. We want people that have been down and come back up. Trevor Lawrence has been a front runner, okay? And that's no fault of his own. He's been super talented. He's been playing quarterback and starting since he was 14 years old, Greeny. So he's always been out front. But I know this, Greeny, even being out front, even being the guy who's always been the most talented guy, he's always excelled. 34-2 as a starter. And while the comments raise my ear and the comments make me sit up a little bit because I understand the era in which I grew up in, I understand how I would perceive it. I also have to understand that this new millennial, this Generation Z or X, whatever you want to call these guys who are new, they're born in the 21st century, they view things differently. They look at things differently. And it just bothers us. We're older. We want to hear he's the first guy in and the last guy out. And he doesn't pick up his phone. He goes off social media for the entire season. Well, Greeny, man, that's over with. We have to become accustomed to this new age athlete. And to Mel's point, that's Trevor's dad saying that he doesn't have to do that. Trevor is showing us, based on the tape that we've seen at 34-2 as a starter, at going out and competing at the highest level, that he wants to win. He has won. He has done the things on tape, which is how we judge these quarterbacks to win. And I based that off the tape, Greeny, because I haven't met him in person and I don't know it. But you can watch a lot by how a guy competes and how the level he competes at. Trevor Lawrence is a winner regardless of what his perceived mentality is.
Fair, exactly. And that point is exactly why I didn't think this was a big deal. But then, Lewis, you did make it a much more interesting story when you did bring up the idea that if any person close to Justin Fields were quoted saying, he's not, I want to win a Super Bowl at all costs, the conversation literally on every sports talk show in America would have been completely different today. Lou.
Yeah, and it would have been. Look, and it doesn't matter where, to me, where Justin is coming from and what his path has been to where he is right now, and whether that should automatically manufacture a chip on his shoulder relative to Trevor always being out front and being the consensus number one and being successful all the time. It doesn't matter where they've come from. It's about what they're going to be expected to do going forward and what the level of commitment is going to be expected going forward. And see, if someone, any quarterback, says going forward, hey, you know what? Or rather, if it's suggested that I'm not a win-at-all-cost type of person, I'm one of those, and other people have suggested in this article that Trevor could walk away from the game at any point in time and they wouldn't be shocked and he'd be totally content. Look, that is something that on its surface is going to raise some ears and raise some eyebrows. And look, if Justin, someone had said that about Justin Fields, regardless of where he had come from and what his story has been going forward, considering the kind of stuff that's been said about him right now, there's no doubt that it would have created a firestorm. There's no question about it. And look, I am not doubting Trevor Lawrence. I don't know Trevor Lawrence. I don't know what drives him. I've never talked to him personally. But I do know this in the NFL. The level of commitment and the level of preparation and the level playing field that you are dealing with in the NFL is different than the ACC. It's different than playing Ohio State and Alabama. It's different than playing Wake Forest and Notre Dame and Boston College. And the players who have played it at the highest level at the NFL know that, particularly at the quarterback position. Steve Young says it all the time. It is about the details. If you want to be one of the greats, if you want to have that kind of legacy, and I'll tell you this, you draft a quarterback number one overall because you expect him to be one of the greats. And when people are talking about you in the same breath that they talk about Peyton Manning, John Elway, Andrew Luck, they expect you to be great. They expect you to be willing to go that extra mile. They expect, and Tom Brady has set the standard as far as what it takes to be great in the NFL, because it's not just about skill level. It's about commitment to the details. You better have it. You better have it. And maybe Trevor does. I don't know him, and I'm not going to doubt him. I'm just saying, reading that article made my eyes get a little bit wide and go, okay, this is interesting. This is interesting to me.
Mel, I have to hold you, Mel. I have to hold it one second. I have to take a break. We'll come back. We'll do it. Mm-hmm. We'll finish it. We will mm-hmm. do this justice. And I have a whole other scenario that I want to bounce off all of you guys as well. We could do this for 10 hours. We continue in just a moment here on Get Up. They are the biggest questions of the draft, and we will bring you the answers in just a moment. You're watching a jam-packed edition of Get Up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Don't forget tonight, the 25th annual WNBA Draft live on ESPN 7 Eastern, virtual format again. Dallas has the first two picks, Atlanta 3, Indiana 4. It's tonight, 7 Eastern on ESPN. Meanwhile, First Take is just a few minutes away here on ESPN. Are too many players being rested in the NBA? They'll talk about that. And should the Browns be considered the favorites in the AFC North? Stephen A. Max and Molly debate that and more. First Take is about 4 minutes away here on ESPN. We will finish our 4 minutes here. Mel, I wanted to let you have the final word. Again, we were talking about Trevor Lawrence, the quotes from Sports Illustrated yesterday. You clearly had a finishing thought. I'd like to let you hear it too right now.
Yeah, I respect what Lewis said. I agree with a lot of what Lewis was saying. I think what I disagree with is the real time of these comments and real time the experiences these guys have up until now creates what they're saying. And I think for Trevor and his father, up until this point, you don't have a chip when you have everything coming your way positively. A chip is created by hate, by doubters and skeptics. He hasn't had that yet. Once he's in the NFL, maybe we'll have a few people questioning whether he's going to be as great as we think he will be. But Justin has already had that. So real time is what you have to look at. In terms of the Tom Brady thing, it's not Tom Brady was a sixth-round pick, a Southwest Texas State quarterback and a Hofstra quarterback went against him. He had a battle at Michigan for everything. Tom Brady had the chip early on and maintained it throughout. Trevor may get that chip once he's in the NFL, and I guarantee you once he's in the league, he'll have a few haters.
Yeah, and look, the bottom line is he's not proving anybody wrong. He's got to try and prove them right. That's a very different dynamic. Okay, I want to leave that thought there because I want to finish with this fascinating potential scenario for my draft night compadres. And Mel, I'll start with you. We've outlined a scenario in which quarterbacks could go five of them in the first seven picks. That scenario involves someone trading up to take Justin Fields. If the 49ers surprise most people and take either Fields or Trey Lance with the third pick, and then Mac Jones starts to become the one who falls. He may not be the one that every team is dying for. He may be more of an acquired taste, if you will. So, Mel, I'll start with you as the man whose name is synonymous with the draft. If Jones falls past three, where does he wind up? How does that play out?
I got to believe the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick. I said, hey, he's not Tom Brady, but he was kind of resembled Tom Brady when Tom came out of Michigan as a late sixth-round pick. That was Mac Jones and the Bill Belichick-Nick Saban connection. Knowing what that offense was, what Brady can be again with Mac Jones, I got to believe New England will do everything they could to move up in a position to get Mac Jones.
What do you think, Lewis? You played for Bill. You know how he thinks. How would you see him handling that if Mac is the one who falls?
Yeah, I think, again, when you're talking about trying to exploit market inefficiencies, and maybe some people would say this isn't an inefficiency, but market opportunities, let's put it that way. I think he'd try and take advantage of that opportunity. I'm in lockstep with Mel Kiper on that. He would try to make sure he gets in a position and try to figure out, now, who else might like him? He knows that Matt Rhule had him down at the Senior Bowl from Carolina. He knows that eight spot may be a tipping point. I'm sure he'd be going, okay, let's go to work. Let's start making some calls and see if we can get this young man into the fold here. Yeah, that would make for an intriguing, intriguing move up on the part of New England.
Boog, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I completely agree with the guys as far as Mac Jones, Greeny. You know, there's talk that five of these guys are going to go into top eight. Somebody's going to fall. Somebody, if Atlanta decides not to take a quarterback at four and Mac Jones doesn't go at three, then who falls? Where do they go? One of these guys are going to fall down. I don't know if it's going to be as precipitous as the Aaron Rodgers fall all the way down in the mid-20s. But I just think at some point, based on this draft, it's always reality TV. One of these guys is going to fall, Greeny, and I can't wait to sit there with you guys and watch and find out who it is.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Super Lewis, I literally have 10 seconds. Do these guys know who each other are taking? Does Bill Belichick already know who San Francisco is taking? Are they honest with each other about things like that?
No, they don't know. They don't know. Look, I was just texting with the GM the other day. He was asking me questions. We're going back and forth. Who do you think Atlanta's taking? Who do you think? They're trying to figure it out too, man. They're trying to figure it out, too.
That will have played such a huge role in playing this thing out. What a pleasure to have you three guys today. Thank you for getting up. We apologize for the technical issues throughout so much of the morning. And mostly, we thank you for getting up with us. As always, we'll see you back in Better Than Ever, same time, same place tomorrow. First Take starts right now.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.